You don't appreciate the joy of simply bending at the knees until you can't. Same goes for doing a little hip shake or swinging a golf club. At O'Connor Hospital, we get it. And as the Valley's first hospital to earn the Joint Commission's Center of Excellence for Hip and Knee Replacement, we're devoted to Twistology, which is our word for getting our patients back to taking the stairs, lifting grandkids, and celebrating birdies. O'Connor Hospital, your community hospital. OCH.SCCGov.org.
Thursdays on the Huge Radio Network are presented by Bean Garter. They're one of America's top accounting and business firms. They're based in downtown Grand Rapids. Tom Rosenbach is a managing partner. And beyond your personal and business tax needs, Bean Garter can help you with your accounting. If you want to have updated real-time financial information on where your company is at up to the minute, Bean Garter presents Sage's Intax industry-leading software that will host your financial data in real time. So if you're using QuickBooks or Great Plains, your business is old and slow. If you want to be new and fast, turn to Sage's Intax industry-leading software that will host your financial data in real time. Bean Garter can help your business today. Find out more at beangarter.com. That is BeanGarter.com.
A throwback Thursday's happening right now on the Huge Show.
Go live at 1-866-838-HUGE.
That's 1-866-838-4843 on the Miller Lite Hotline.
At Huge Show on Twitter. The Huge Show on Facebook and Instagram. Now, let's go live to the Auto Value Bumper to Bumper Parts Store Studio.
With the man ready to throw down.
The huge one, Bill Simonson.
You ready?
Yes.
No Bill Simonson today. You are stuck with us. Blake Froehling, Brad Tunney filling in today for Bill. We're the ESPN 100.9 FM guys. You've heard us a couple times filling in the past. We come to you live from our studios in Midland, high atop Dow Diamond. So glad you could join us for our number two of the Huge Show. You can get involved with the show. Call us on the Miller Lite Hotline, 1-866-838-HUGE. 1-866-838-4843. Thursday is brought to you by Bean Garter. Go to beangarter.com to learn more. We talked with Mike O'Hara from DetroitLions.com in hour number one. Talk some Lions, their shortcomings. Are they a playoff team? What problem do they have that's most fixable to make them a playoff team? We also talked about, since it is a throwback Thursday, the anniversary of Michigan State, Michigan trouble with the snap game in 2015. That's kind of our throwback segment. So if you want to get involved with any of those topics, give us a shot, 1-866-838-4843. But I want to circle back to the Lions topic. We teased it a little bit at the end of the 3 o'clock hour. Jeff Seidel from Detroit Free Press had three problems that the Lions have that are holding them back right now. It's their run game, their ability to stop the run, and their red zone efficiency. So what we want to know, besides do you think they're a playoff caliber team right now, which of those three problems, their lack of a run game, stopping the run, or red zone efficiency, is the most fixable right now that can propel them to being a playoff team?
I'm going to jump out and just kind of lay out some of the things that I've noticed about each of those three categories, right? The run game, first of all, I think we've got to acknowledge, before we start a discussion about the run game being a problem, we've got to acknowledge that it is better than anything we've seen from the Lions in recent memory already.
I would say there's more volume. It's not necessarily better.
And that's the key for me, right? So the Lions this year, 13th in yards per play in the NFL. That's not just yards per attempt on the ground or yards per attempt through the air. That's in total on offense. Yards per play, they're 13th in the league. That's pretty good. That is obviously above average. And for a team that's 2-2-1, that fits what the record is. So if they're 13th in yards per play, but then 26th in yards per carry, how are they managing to make up for that by obviously having big plays in the passing game? And I think big plays in the passing game don't come from success on the ground all the time. It just comes from being on the ground. It comes from a commitment to the ground game. So they're 16th in yards per game on the ground, but 26th in yards per carry. That means they're averaging way more than a lot of teams in just pure rushes per game. So when it comes to the running game, it obviously needs to be better than 26th in yards per carry. And Kerryon Johnson has not been a guy that has shown in year two to be that next level back. As an Ezekiel Elliott, a Todd Gurley, a Christian McCaffrey. Like, he's obviously not on that level, and he's not going to be on that level because a lot of those guys either show it in year one or year two. So if we just face the fact that he's not one of those guys, can he at least be average when he's running the football? I think the offensive line and both pass protection and run protection has shown some improvements over last year. I think that's clear.
They're healthier,
correct,
but I would say, at least anecdotally, watching that Packers game, whenever they would run on first or second down, the offensive line didn't get any push. Kerryon Johnson was being hit right at the line of scrimmage. There were no huge holes for him to run through, save for maybe a handful of plays. So I'm sure there are numbers to back up where that offensive line ranks in the NFL, but just from what I have seen, they're not getting that push that you see from the Cowboys or the Saints or teams like that that have good running games. So part of that maybe is on Kerryon Johnson not being able to create for himself, but there was also the stat earlier in the year where it said Kerryon Johnson faced more 8-man, 9-man boxes than any back in the league. So his numbers being low also a little bit deceiving because teams are loading up against the run for the Lions. So it's a combination of factors. I think he needs some help from that offensive line, but I also think the more deep shots that the Lions are willing to take, like we saw against Green Bay, the more teams will have to back off loading up the box, and they're going to be afraid of that deep threat where the pass will set up the run instead of normally the run setting up the pass.
Great point. And I think the fact that you bring up the statistic about teams loading the box against the Lions, and a lot of that is overlooked when you very, very just narrowly look at yards per carry as a way to dictate, okay, are they running the football well? There obviously needs to be some context put in. I think the way that they've been running the football, and again, last 5 years, they have never finished better than 23rd in the NFL in yards per game on the ground. And this year, they're 16th. I think if you just take it based on what the brand, what the narrative of this team has been over the last 5-10 years, it's that they can't run the football at all. They have finished dead last in the NFL in rushing yards 2 out of the last 5 years. So the fact that they're right in the middle of the pack right now is not too bad. Moving along to stopping the run and red zone efficiency. I'll start with red zone efficiency and see if you agree with me here. First of all, who have they played defensively? We know Green Bay's defense is really good. We know Kansas City's defense in the red zone specifically is pretty good. Of the five teams that they've played, all five of them rank in the top 20 in red zone defense. They have not played a bottom feeder, a set of Swiss cheese in the end zone. They've played some pretty good red zone defenses so far. They have not played the Miamis of the world or the Atlantas of the world. Just the terrible defenses to maybe help out that statistic. So sure, they're 21st in NFL in red zone efficiency, but they've played all top 19 or 18 teams in red zone defense through the first 5 weeks of the season. And Minnesota's got a good defense. We know that. And Chicago's going to have a good defense coming up. So it's not going to get any easier, but just take that with a grain of salt, I think, a little bit.
Right. And I think the point about execution that Mike O'Hara made was an excellent point.
Yeah.
Looking at the Hockenson play.
Hockenson's dropped 3 touchdown passes this year, right?
Yes.
And I mean, 3 touchdown passes for a team that's already 21st in NFL in red zone efficiency. I believe they're converting about 50% of the time touchdowns in the red zone.
Can you imagine the outcry there would be if you replace Hockenson with the name Ebron?
Okay.
Same problems.
All right.
Just a different guy. And I know he's a rookie. You have to cut him some slack. The learning curve for tight ends as a rookie is incredibly steep. So you have to think about that. But 3 drop touchdowns right there. You had Kerryon Johnson. He mentioned fumbling against Kansas City at the 1 yard line where another couple inches and that's a touchdown. So I think some of those gaffes, those miscues, are going to even out in the second half of the season and going forward. So I think that efficiency will rise, but the question is, how far will it rise to the point where it's no longer execution that's a problem, but the actual play calling, the schematics in the end zone, where they don't have an offensive line where if it's first and goal at the three, they can just run the ball four times and guarantee a score.
They don't really have the back to do that either.
Right.
Their lead back is a scat guy for the most part.
Right, and the first touchdown he scored, I mean, like, some replays showed that he wasn't in.
Right.
And so, against Green Bay. So it's never a given, and so you don't have that luxury. There is no bruiser. We thought maybe C.J. Anderson could be that bruiser for the Lions, but he didn't show that and now got cut. So because you don't have that luxury, teams can kind of play the pass in the red zone a little bit more.
I just think if, one, the fumble by Kerryon Johnson at the goal line, three touchdown drops for T.J. Hockenson, a guy that came in, he was the opposite of Eric Ebron as a first-round tight end, and that Ebron did not have a high catch rate in college. That was one knock on him coming in, is that he can't catch the football very well. Great route runner, great athlete. He's going to be able to block for you. T.J. Hockenson, he is a pass catcher who can also block for you. He was your do-it-all tight end. Three touchdown drops in the first 5 weeks. Detroit, 50% of red zone chances have ended in touchdowns. Number one team in the league is Houston at 71%. Those three touchdowns alone puts you into the top half of the NFL in red zone efficiency. Mm-hmm. I don't think red zone efficiency is the problem that everyone is making it out to be just yet. Which leaves us with stopping the run, which is always key for any team, especially one that should be priding itself on its defense, right?
Absolutely. And I think going forward, that could be the easiest problem to fix because you haven't had Mike Daniels and you haven't had DeShon Hand, two top-tier defensive linemen that you were expecting to have from day one, and that's why this Lions defense was getting so much hype in the preseason. Look how stacked this D-line is with A'shaun Robinson coming into his own. You have Snacks Harrison. You have Trey Flowers coming off the edge. Romeo Okwara is playing well. You have all these guys, but then the injuries start to pile up. And Mike Daniels has been phenomenal for the Packers. We saw what DeShon Hand did as a rookie. He was one of the highest graded rookies in the NFL. You add those two guys and instantly, I think that totally changes the look of your run defense, and it's only a matter of time, hopefully not more than a couple weeks before both those guys are back, then you'll see what that Lions defense, what their full potential really is.
And I'm in 100% agreement with Blake there. Again, the question right now is of the three things laid out in the Detroit Free Press today as being persistent problems for the Lions, run game, stopping the run, and red zone efficiency. And we all see those three problems. We all know they're apparent. They're not things that you've got to look deep in the statistics for. We know as a 2-2-1 football team through the first 6 weeks of the season, this is a team that has struggled to run the football and struggled to stop the run. We saw it on Monday night against the Packers and has struggled to score in the red zone. That was one of the knocks on this team in the first and the second half against the Packers if you wanted to be an alternative to the officials losing the game. So those three things are not statistical. I mean, they are statistically proven, but they're based on the eye test too. And of those three things, what is the most fixable? That's 1-866-838-HUGE, 1-866-838-4843. I think Blake and I are on the same page here. It's stopping the run. You get those guys back in the middle of the line. This is a defense with a ton of money invested in it. They're doing a decent job in the back seven compared to the front seven in terms of their pass defense. Can the run-stopping defense join the party?
It'd be certainly nice. It would take a lot of pressure off of those defensive backs who have been getting a lot of attention, especially with Darius Slay in and out of the lineup, banged up, Quandre Diggs missing some time. So you're having nickel backs come in there and have to play prominent roles. And because you can't stop the run, they have to help with that. And then also, do you load the box up and put those guys on an island? It puts them in a tough position. Now, they come in and face a Minnesota team that had been struggling until really last week and 2 weeks. Now they have two receivers who are red hot. Kirk Cousins is starting to be on the upswing. This will be an interesting test for this defense, not to mention the fact that they have a top three running back in this season in Dalvin Cook, who could torch possibly that Lions run defense if things don't change.
Yeah, and Mike O'Hara brought up that statistic. Last, what, 5 years? Only one team in the NFC North has a winning has an even 500 record against the Lions, and that's Minnesota, who has a 500 record against Detroit. I just don't know if this is a great matchup for the Lions, and that's unfortunate because I think Minnesota, more so than Chicago, is the team they're competing with for second place right now. I think Detroit is a better football team than the Chicago Bears, albeit with the Bears' defense. Their inefficiencies, their inability on the offensive end, if I'm a Chicago Bears fan, is just too much for me to handle. I trust the Lions offensively a little bit more, and defensively, I think they're fine. So Minnesota, I think is the biggest two games of the year for the Lions moving forward. Situational aside, it's just, can you beat the team that you need to beat the most in your division? And that's the Vikings. You talk about Dalvin Cook, that guy is a monster. He has entered the Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley type realm in the NFL, right? He is there. Aaron Jones, I don't know if is there yet, and just lit the Lions up.
Yeah.
I think Dalvin Cook could have a field day. And even if he doesn't, we're staring at two of maybe the best 15 to 20 wide receivers in the league on offense with the Vikings, and Adam Thielen and Steph Diggs, who had been complaining at the beginning of the year he wasn't getting enough touches. Now he gets those touches. He explodes for nearly 150 yards and two touchdowns, double-digit receptions. If Kirk Cousins is an average football player, this is a very scary Minnesota team because they have an above-average defense too.
Right, and I think another shortcoming of this Lions defense is putting pressure on the quarterback, and some of those plays were negated because of hands to the face against Green Bay, but especially against Kansas City, that really stood out, where the Lions intentionally rushed only four guys, it seemed like, on 90% of the plays, and they just dropped everybody back in coverage. And I think with a guy like Kirk Cousins, you need to amp up the pressure on him and force him to make a bad decision, because those two receivers are good enough to work the defense and get open, and Kirk Cousins is smart enough, if he has all day, he will take the safe route and take a couple yards. He's not a guy that's going to try to throw into triple coverage because he's more of a conservative passer. But if you put pressure on him, I think that kind of changes things for him and reverts him back to the quarterback that was getting so much heat a couple years ago around the NFL community. So we'll wrap up here. We'll go into Michigan State a little bit coming up. Tim Stout from WILX in Lansing will join us on the phone. The Spartans in an interesting position right now in their first bye week. 4-3, back-to-back blowout losses to top 10 teams. The fan base, myself included, I don't really know what to think at this point. Players are transferring all over the place. It's not, at least personally, I don't see it as an Armageddon situation like 2016 felt like, but it certainly doesn't feel good with everything going on like that. So Tim Stout, one of the best guys that we could talk to about this, but it just seems like a weird place for Michigan State and Mark D'Antonio to be right now.
I think both fan bases, both Michigan State and Michigan, are verging towards being disinterested, right? You're starting to get the feel that both fan bases are a bit disinterested come Saturday afternoons, and that's the last thing you want in your football program. Even if you're really bad, maybe you'll have some interest, but I think the teams now, expectations higher than they maybe should be for both groups, and they have lost interest a little bit in their fan bases, so we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, especially with Michigan taking on Penn State, Whiteout.
Huge matchup, huge.
Yeah, maybe the last
chance for this season for Michigan, right?
Right. I would agree with that. So
this is truly the first must win for Michigan.
I would say so.
Truly the first must win, because a loss eliminates you from Big Ten contention.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's like you're already in the playoffs now, basically.
Right. There haven't been any must wins yet for Michigan. Those are all kind of blown out of proportion. Must win, must win, must beat Wisconsin. No. Because right now you win out, you still win the Big Ten East.
Mm-hmm. It's a little easier said than done when you have Penn State, Michigan State, and, oh, by the way, Ohio State waiting for you, Notre Dame as well. So Michigan, one of the toughest schedules in the country. Michigan State gets a bye week in two of their next 3 weeks with Penn State sandwiched in the middle, and a weird scheduling quirk there as well. So we'll talk about that with Tim Stout from WILX when we come back. You can also join in the conversation on our Miller Lite hotline, 1-866-838-4843. We'll be back with more on the Huge Radio Network.
This is a Throwback Thursday on the Huge Radio Network.
Huge here with a reminder that tonight you can see the Old Americana Band for just $10 and get two samples of Luca Mariano products inside the home bar at the Bob and Downtown GR. They're a hot band out of Nashville, country/rock feel to them. and it's only $10 tonight. 6 p.m. Everything begins inside home at the Bob. And also check out the Old Americana Band online. Wherever you download your music, just search Old Americana Band and ask for Luca Mariano. Premium whiskey, bourbon, and rye. Wherever you order up your favorite drink, or wherever you stop to get your favorite whiskey, bourbon, or rye at your local store. If they don't have Luca Mariano, make sure they get it. But see the Old Americana Band tonight, 6 p.m. Only a $10 ticket inside home at the Bob in downtown Grand Rapids. And tomorrow, Friday night, at the Majestic in Detroit. And Saturday at 6 o'clock at the Round Bar at Mission Point on Mackinac Island.
Does the sizzle have your attention yet? You don't want to miss Brand's new $9.99 dinner special. Your choice of the 7-ounce prime rib, 1-pound rack of fall-off-the-bone barbecue ribs, or the signature 6-ounce sizzle and sirloin steak. Each comes with two sides and bottomless yeast rolls. Yours for only $9.99, Monday through Thursdays, 3 to 8 p.m. at Brand's, home of Michigan's original sizzle.
Huge here for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. Did you know you can watch boys and girls sports live and recorded on the archives at MHSAA.tv? That's MHSAA.tv. Log on and watch high school teams in all sports from all across Michigan, courtesy of the Michigan High School Athletic Association. And also the MHSAA takes pride in what they do for our boys and girls, our sons and daughters, on and off the field, on and off the court, on and off the ice, on and off every playing surface at every high school in Michigan. So special thanks to all the parents, coaches, and administrators for what they do to allow kids to experience high school sports in Michigan. And if you want to watch the action live, boys and girls sports, go to MHSAA.tv.
This is the Huge Radio Network.
We're back on a Bean Garter Throwback Thursday here on the Huge Radio Network. Brad Tunney, Blake Froehling, we're here with you on ESPN 100.9 FM. If you're interested in what Bean Garter has to offer, you can go to beangarter.com. That's BeeneGarter.com to learn more. We've been talking Lions. We've been talking Michigan State and Michigan, the anniversary of the trouble with the snap game that took place October 17th. 2015, so the four-year anniversary of that huge Michigan State victory over Michigan at the Big House. Jalen Watts Jackson, Harbaugh's first year there, Michigan State defeating Michigan. And we talked earlier in the show about what program was altered more by that one play. What program has had their timeline, their trajectory altered more due to that one crazy play that ended the one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports, the Michigan State game 4 years ago to the day. So it's a perfect on-brand throwback Thursday with the Huge Radio Network and all of the huge listeners across the great state of Michigan. Hoping to talk to Tim Stout coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour. He's with WILX. Nobody locked into the Lansing sports area better than he is, so we'll be talking to Tim Stout hopefully coming up soon on the show. Again, that's Blake. I'm Brad. And Blake, one of the things that you touched on before going to break was kind of this theme that's started with Michigan State, in that players now has become a trend entering the transfer portal as this program is going through some turbulent times.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Every program has players transfer during the year, especially with the new rule where you can still redshirt if you play 4 games or fewer. So transferring in general is not new, but the fact that so many for Michigan State are happening, it seems like all at once and mostly on offense, he's got to be a little bit troubling, right? Weston Bridges, a wide receiver, hasn't played this year, is transferring. Cam Chambers, who seemed to have a really bright future with Michigan State after his start, gone. A linebacker, Brandon Boyer-Randall, gone. And the two most surprising ones for me were the two running backs, Connor Hayward and Ladarius Jefferson, both gone. Because, I mean, now it's just one running back, Elijah Collins, and then true freshman behind him.
And no wonder you can't run the football.
Right, right. Connor Hayward was getting touches. Ladarius Jefferson was getting touches. They were both being used in the offense. They didn't win the starting job, but now that you lose both of them, it's really desperation time. If anything happens to Elijah Collins, this Michigan State offense, which is already struggling, is going to regress even more, and that much more pressure is going to be put on Brian Lewerke.
Well, and last year it was the injuries, and I know most of the offensive struggles came due to injuries, but some of it was schematic, some of it was talent. We know that you don't end up being one of the worst offensive teams in the country as a Power 5 school just because of injuries. This year, it's this issue on top of schematics, on top of some injuries, on top of a lack of talent on the offensive end. It just feels like too many things have piled up with this program, specifically on the offensive end of the football. And mind you, this is not the defensive group that we thought it was coming into the year. It's good. It's not Michigan State all-time great the way we a lot of folks talked about it. It just feels like a lot of things are piling up with this group, and more so than in a lot of other sports and in a lot of other professions, that falls on one guy, and that's the head coach of your football program.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is lack of depth on both sides of the ball, too. You have the top name guys, Daryl Stewart and Cody White, the two receivers. You don't know anybody after that. And on defense, you have a couple nice pieces, but there's no depth behind them. And I think that's kind of leading to some of those shortcomings.
Sounds like we do have Tim on the line now. Tim Stout from WILX. Again, no one locked into the Lansing sports scene more so than he is, and across the state of Michigan as well. So, Tim, thanks so much for joining the Huge Show today.
Happy to be there. Hi, guys. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well, Tim. And we just started the discussion about this trend that's starting with the Michigan State football program and all of these guys entering the transfer portal. What's your take on it?
Well, it's a different world. I mean, they have transfer guys, guys that transfer in other years, but they do it over a 12-month period, not in a 5-week period. So it's not to me a surprise that guys are transferring out. I guess the way they do it with this new portal, and they've done it at this time of the year, is something to get used to. But there's more than 500 players in the portal, you know, across America. I'd be curious to know how many other schools are losing players. Michigan lost a tight end this week. But, you know, I guess I asked the question this morning on the radio, if you got 85 scholarships, do you need 85 scholarships? Because you can't play all these guys at the same time. Furthermore, if you don't have enough playing time and these guys are transferring out, does that mean you have too many scholarships to hand out for the playing time available?
But it seems like now, especially with the running backs transferring and Connor Hayward and Ladarius Jefferson, that one puzzled me the most because Elijah Collins, yes, was the starter, but both those guys were getting touches. And now, how thin is that line for Michigan State offensively of one false step for Elijah Collins and this whole offense maybe crumbles because their run game crumbles with him?
Well, they're struggling as it is to run the ball. And, you know, it doesn't, to me, I don't think there's that much difference between all of the running backs they've used, because I think their offensive line against the two good teams, Ohio State, Wisconsin, they could have had Jimmy Brown in his prime back there, and he's not going to run very much because I don't think there are many holes for them against the good teams. But I thought they'd struggle running the ball after I watched the first game of the year. I mean, they only scored one offensive touchdown against Tulsa. And when I saw that game right out of the chute, I said, I'll bet they struggle in a lot of these games. They're going to be a low-scoring team. They don't have the wide receiver depth that they've had in the past. And I've always been kind of tepid on Lewerke. I mean, I don't think that he's a bad quarterback, but I don't think he's a difference maker either from the standpoint that if you want to get to the Big Ten championship game, do you have the components that you need offensively to get past Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State in the Big Ten East, let alone Indiana, and that game was tied in East Lansing with 10 seconds to go. So, you know, I'm not really surprised by much of this. I thought the Ohio State-Wisconsin games would be closer like everyone else did. I had them lose in those games. But, you know, in the bye week here, are they going to turn things around and win the last five, or are they going to continue to struggle against some of these teams beginning with Penn State next week?
So we've all seen the offensive struggles. We thought maybe there'd be a change as Mark D'Antonio reshuffled the coaching staff. And I'm sure you saw the question that was posed to him after the Wisconsin game about the changes on the coaching staff. What did you think of his response? Kind of harsh a little bit to the reporter. What did you think of the response and the whole situation in terms of not making huge changes in this offseason?
Well, no coach is going to throw his assistant coaches under the bus after a game in an emotional setting like that. He's just never going to do it. I thought it was an ambush question from the standpoint that there's no way he's going to say, yeah, I think you're right. I should have changed assistant coaches. These guys aren't getting it done. You guys were right, and I'm wrong. I mean, to me, it's very naive to think that any coach, let alone D'Antonio, is going to come back with a response other than the fact that he's irritated to have to answer that. My response is that they had a lot of these same assistants in 2015 when they won the Big Ten title and they went to the Cotton Bowl to play Alabama. And I don't think those guys took a stupid pill. What I see is a team of players that are good enough to dominate Tulsa and Western Michigan. They're pretty much on the same par with Indiana and Arizona State, and they're nowhere near the caliber that those players have to beat Ohio State, Wisconsin, especially on the road. I don't think any number of trick plays is going to turn around the Ohio State, Wisconsin game, and as it turned out, the average is evened out. They managed to beat Indiana at the end, and they lost Arizona State in the end, and that's my take.
Tim Stout is here talking to us on The Huge Show from WILX. So, Tim, we kind of have a week off now to digest Michigan State. Going forward in the second half of the season, of course, expectations have changed for this team from maybe what we had in the preseason. How should we adjust our expectations? Where do you think this Michigan State team goes from here?
Well, I told Huge I had them 8-4 at the start of the year. The over and under in Las Vegas, which I tend to believe a lot more than the local media around here, because I've gone through the years that I always think there's an adoring local media here relative to the expectations in football and basketball. I believe that in basketball, too. I mean, the way they've got basketball around here, they're going to beat the Golden State Warriors. And I tell Huge, I'm far more guarded than everyone else. But in football, I heard all these guys at 10-2. I mean, this was a 7-6 team. It barely made a bowl game. It could not score a touchdown last year in the Red Box Bowl against an average defensive team in Oregon. So the excuse was, well, they got a lot of injuries, so that'll all change when they get back. And I thought, I'll believe that when I see it. You know they're going to win the first two games, but then I thought Arizona State might be a toss-up, and yet I thought State would win that. I thought State would win the first five and lose to Ohio State and Wisconsin. So I had them at 5-2. Okay, they're 4-3. I had them losing to Penn State and Michigan. I think those games will likely be close. I would probably, on October 17th, pick Penn State and Michigan in close games. But this team, to me, just simply does not have the offensive talent, throwing, catching, running, kicking. They don't have that to beat teams, in my opinion, the caliber of Ohio State and Wisconsin. Now, whether they can get past Penn State at home or Michigan on the road, all that remains to play out, assuming that they beat Illinois, Maryland, and Rutgers. So if they win those, that's 7. If they lose the other two, then they're 7-5, and I'm off one. If they beat one of the two between Penn State, Michigan, bingo. There they are with a shot to win a bowl game depending on who they play.
Let's move over to Michigan now for a moment. They've got a huge matchup with Penn State coming up on Saturday. And Brad and I were talking about the Wolverines early in the show, and we thought that maybe this was like their last chance, a must-win game before things kind of maybe fall off the rails and everything isn't in front of them anymore, where if they can win out now, they still have Big Ten title aspirations, but this seems like a turning point game for Michigan. How do you see that playing out?
Well, they've surprised me. I mean, Huge will tell you I had them winning the Big Ten title at the start of back in July, simply because I just thought it was their turn. They hadn't been there. They had a veteran quarterback returning. They got a million five-star recruits that are ready to jump in, da-da-da-da. But I was not impressed with Michigan in the first game, like State and Tulsa. I mean, even though they beat Middle Tennessee, I mean, I didn't think they were all that spectacular in that game. I'm surprised their offense has struggled as much as it has. That is clearly, in my opinion, going to have to get cleaned up because the teams they play are so difficult. I mean, ironically enough, if they run the table and win out, they still, in my opinion, could make the Final Four, because to do it, they're going to have to be 12-1 beating all good teams along the way. I mean, they may have to beat Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, and Notre Dame. Well, if you win those games, you know, you're going to be right there, right in the mix. I don't expect that to happen. I don't see them beating Penn State. Stranger things have happened. I think Penn State's a very good team because that team's very good defensively, and I think Michigan's going to have a very hard time scoring. And if Michigan gets beat up in this game and comes home to play Notre Dame, I mean, Michigan's going to have to get over whatever happens at Penn State because it ain't going to be easy against Notre Dame. And if they lose those two, those fans don't want to hear about it because then they're 5-3, and that's not what they all signed up for, even though that schedule, to me, is brutal for any team, let alone Michigan.
Hey, I think most fans would agree with you, Tim. Brutal schedule. I had them right there in the Big Ten championship game, too, with a dark forced chance of getting to the title game, and just hasn't felt like that Michigan team that a lot of us expected.
Well, you know, my problem is I look at those winged helmets, and I've done it for 50 years, and I just figure that's worth two touchdowns. And when Bo was around there, and to some degree Lloyd was there, maybe there was something to that. When I watch Michigan play today, they just don't look as tough to me, and maybe that's because I can't get past Schembechler, because if nothing else, Michigan was never going to get out tough. But they just look to me like teams can push them around a little bit. I mean, even against Illinois last week, when Illinois came back after being hopelessly out of it, I thought there's no way a Schembechler team is going to let a team like Illinois run 25 off, and now we got a game again. And Harbaugh played on very tough teams at Michigan, but his teams that he coaches just simply, to me, don't look like they're as tough as they were when he was a player years ago. So, you know, maybe I've got them figured wrong. I mean, they surprised me a great deal. I can understand now how they can lose to Wisconsin the way they did, because look at Michigan State and the other teams Wisconsin has pounded. But, you know, to me, the mystery going forward in the Big Ten is, can Michigan play better, play to what some of the expectations for Michigan were at the start of the year, and you know, get back in the hunt? But if not, I mean, can they fall to as low as 6-6, given how they have played at times poorly, and given the teams that they have to play yet? So I think there's going to be a lot of drama yet. I'm not convinced either Ohio State or Wisconsin is going to win this thing, because they both have tough games to play, and they may have to play each other twice, and it'll be interesting to see how all of this plays out in the last 5 or 6 weeks of the year.
One of the most fun conferences in the country, the Big Ten. Happy to have it in our backyard. Tim Stout, appreciate the conversation today, man. It was awesome.
Okay, but guys, keep up the great work. Good to talk to you. Call anytime. Tell Huge I said hi.
Will do. Again, that's Tim Stout from WILX. He's locked into everything Michigan sports-wise, and he just gave us as much as he could right there here on the Huge Radio Network. Any key takeaways for you there, Blake?
Well, he mentioned the possibility that Michigan goes 6-6 this year, and on face value say, well, that's just crazy. They're too good for that. But then you look at how ridiculously hard their schedule is. Penn State, Michigan State.
But the way they've played, there's five toss-up games.
Right. It's unbelievable. I don't know where their strength of schedule ranks nationally. It's got to be top five, right? Them and LSU, just off the top of my head, of two teams that play marquee opponents because of their conference and the non-conference games that they had, where LSU played Texas.
Yeah, if you slide in one top 15 non-conference game, you're right there.
Which they get with Notre Dame, who survived against USC, so that keeps it a marquee matchup. I mean, things just don't let up for Michigan. So if they do, even if they lose two of those toss-up games, it's still going to be viewed in the grand scheme of things as a disappointment for Michigan, when really, if you look at game by game, what percentage of teams in the country would beat those teams? And so I think whatever happens, things are going to be skewed. And if they run the table, I mean, this is the best Michigan team in 30 years.
All right, so we've got a whole lot more to get to on the Huge Radio Network today. If you want to join the conversation, it's 1-866-838-HUGE, 1-866-838-4843. That's the Miller Lite Hotline. This is a Throwback Thursday brought to you by Bean Garter. That's Blake Froehling. I'm Brad Tenney. We're back to wrap up the 4 o'clock hour right after this.
This is a Throwback Thursday on the Huge Radio Network.
Huge here for your local Meijer. You can find savings so good you'll freak at Meijer this week. Find great Halloween costumes for the family starting at $24.99. 20% off Halloween table linens, kitchen towels, mugs, crafts, and food storage. All Halloween apparel for the family is 25% off this week at Meijer. Get $100 off your next purchase when you buy an iPad or Apple Watch. And all Grand Gourmet cooking essentials are 20% off. And get 30 to 40% off Falls Creek apparel for the entire family this week at your local Meijer.
Bigger than any box score, local sports are a victory for the entire community. Building up leaders, breaking down barriers, connecting generations, teaching integrity, blazing a trail, sparking our economy. That's why Meijer sponsors hundreds of local sports teams throughout the Midwest. From Little League to the big leagues, uniforms to stadiums, Meijer knows when we support the home team, we all win.
Huge here for my good friend Tom Rosenbach, who's a managing partner at Bean Garter. Now, they're one of America's top accounting and business firms. They're based in downtown Grand Rapids. They service West Michigan, the state, coast to coast, and globally. If you want to find out more, go to beangarter.com. That is BeenGarter.com. And since 1949, Bean Garter has been passionate about finding solutions that fit their clients' needs. They collaborate. They tap into the industry and practice experts across the country to get the right answer. Answers that inspire confidence, action, and results. It's what Bean Garter does for their clients. They expect it, and Bean Garter delivers. It's how Bean Garter has earned their reputation as a trusted business advisor. Find out more at BeenGarter.com.
This is the Huge Radio Network.
Thursdays on the Huge Show are brought to you by Bean Garter. Go to beangarter.com to learn more. Blake Froehling, Brad Tunney in for Bill Simonson today on the Huge Show. We're from ESPN 100.9 FM in Midland. Glad you could join us. Joining on the conversation on the Miller Lite Hotline, give us a call 1-866-838-HUGE. That's 1-866-838-4843. Last segment, we just talked with Tim Stout from WILX in Lansing, the godfather of Lansing media, basically, in the sports realm. So had a lot to talk about with Michigan State and Michigan, all the transfers coming out of Michigan State's program, the kind of the upheaval internally there, and Michigan with such a brutal schedule they have coming up the rest of the way after already playing Wisconsin. I mean, is 6-6. Really out of the realm of possibility, and is running the table really out of the realm of possibility? I think if you look at some of the national teams that are in contention for a playoff or for conference championships, I think Michigan's path can vary maybe the widest, where they could be barely bowl eligible or they could be in the college football playoff still. They still have all that in front of them because of the opponents they have coming up, starting on Saturday, where they go to Penn State for the whiteout. They have Notre Dame coming up after that. They play Michigan State. They will play Ohio State. So all of that is still in front of them, where if they pick up four marquee wins and beat Ohio State at the end of the season, I mean, they're looking at a college football playoff berth, but those are all toss-up games. They could just as easily lose those games. So basically, what is ahead of Michigan is so volatile, maybe more so than any team we've seen in recent memory whose destiny isn't really set in stone by this point.
And I've got to think some of that is just perception within the state of Michigan. Is there anyone outside the state of Michigan that's considering Michigan to be a college football playoff team right now? Probably not.
Maybe on the peripheral, but not seriously.
Probably not. But because perception is what perception is in the state of Michigan, a lot of folks around these parts had Michigan as a college football playoff team coming into the year. I was one of them. And look, they just don't look that way. Obviously, it's still a possibility, but it's still a possibility for a lot of schools.
Right, but do a lot of schools have the strength of schedule that Michigan does?
Oh, no, not a chance.
That's the point of where they don't look like it now, but because of all those opportunities for big wins, that's what can elevate them. Mm-hmm. But do they have the talent to actually win those games? That's the question. We can get into that more as we approach the 5 o'clock hour here on The Huge Show. Glad you're sticking around with us. We'll talk some more Michigan, Michigan State, maybe dip back into Lions briefly. Ton to cover here on a Throwback Thursday on The Huge Show.